for online frauds, banks have taken, and obviously banks need to take the measures to ensure security. So some of them that you see in today's world is you key in a username and password, and the banks have say virtual keyboards so that there are no key loggers. So key loggers are something that whatever you type that gets logged in, right? So on your keyboard, whatever you type that gets sent to something called as a key logger, which is a program, and that can record exactly what you've typed. So companies or banks, what they do is they would create a virtual keypad on the website. So you just have to click. So you're no longer typing, right? So this is one of the ways in which the key loggers can be avoided, and you could protect your username password. Banks also do something called as a multi-factor authentication or a two-factor authentication. So what happens is, even when you enter a username and password, they'll ask you for another level of security. Say they'll give you a one-time password and your mobile number, where you have to key in that password, and then only you can get entry into your account details in the website. So that's another form of authentication. Some people use things like iris scanning or fingerprint scanning to have enhanced security, but iris scanning is really difficult once where a person is doing a remote transaction. Obviously, in a bank where you visit the facility physically, you would do a fingerprint scanning or a retina scanning, that is possible. But if you're doing an online transaction, say through your mobile phone, etc., it becomes a little difficult in this particular case. Virtual keyboards are employed, we just spoke about them, to mitigate the risk of key loggers, and which they record the keystrokes. So this is, I think, one of the best ways. And I would generally urge everyone to use the virtual key loggers, because even if it is your laptop and you know you're not using it from a publicly available workstation, even if it is your laptop, you might not know if there is a malicious code running in the backend, right? Now, if the malicious code has some key logger attached to it, then I mean, there's no way to prevent the information getting relayed back, right? So hence, I would urge to use, say, the virtual keyboards, because this give another layer of security. Banks also utilize multiple authentication levels. We just spoke about those things like multi-factor authentication, provide for verification. So and they have different password mechanisms, password rotation policies. Say after 30 days or 40 days, you need to reset a password. How strong a password has to be, that is also important. So what happens is, there are certain programs designed where they could break your password. So and there's a famous time analysis, you would get it on the internet, what time it takes for an attacker to break into your password. If it is, say, four characters, it takes a X amount of time. If it is four characters and a special character, then it takes a little more. If there are capital letters, uppercase, lowercase, along with special characters, then it takes a little longer. And then if the length of the password is more, say 8 digits or more, and then there are special characters, and you have upper space and lower space characters, it takes a long time for a attacker to actually do the password, know the password, right? So banks employ these kind of things. Then the transaction password has to be different from the viewing password. So these are some of the mechanisms that banks employ. Virtual key loggers are one. The multi-factor authentication in the form of sending a one-time password to first log in, one time password to do a transaction, and then on top of it, the third transaction is to key in certain numbers from your debit card. So one of the banks uses a grid which is there on the debit card number, and say these are 8 characters, so A, B, C, D, E, F, and every character would have a number. So at the real time, once the OTP is okayed, you still have to have one more form of security by entering the character numbers. So that's again a form of enhanced security that banks offer. Another challenge comes, and I think we just briefly spoke about it, is the APT, or the Advanced Persistent Threats. In this, the fraudster, fraudsters use the APT method for cyber attacks, targeting organizations by infiltrating their IT infra through social engineering attacks. Social engineering, as I said, maybe through Facebook, through LinkedIn, through any other forms. It could be a web, it could be an email, it could be a bot attack. So these kind of attacks are very difficult to track. We spoke about the nuclear reactor, which was a bot attack. So bot attack is kind of, or it comes under the APT, the Advanced Persistent Threats. These threats have certain behavior. So how the security agencies kind of block them is basis the signatures or the behavior, they kind of block these kind of attacks. Social engineering. So hackers create fake profiles on social networks like LinkedIn, Instagram, Facebook, and they pose as legitimate employees of the company. They trick employees into opening, say, malicious links or attachments, and then they inject malware in the company system and gain remote access through sensitive information. Imagine what happens is, say as a employee, you receive an email from say the HR desk saying increment for this year confidential, right? If that is the subject line, as an employee, you are bound to open it, right? It would have an Excel, and the moment you open the Excel, there is the Excel is blank. Now what happens in this case is there is a exe or a executable file which is embedded within the Excel, which a normal person wouldn't know. So by opening that Excel in the email, what has happened is he's triggered a exe file, and that has started running in the backend. Now the person really doesn't know what is happening. I mean, he would just say, oh, I've got this email, I clicked on this Excel, but I found nothing, and he'll close it, right? And then life goes on. Just imagine he doing, say, payment transactions, bank transactions, credit card transactions on the same machine. The exe that is running in the backend will slowly get this information and relay this sensitive information back to, say, someone who wants to use it for malicious purposes. Maybe there is company sensitive data, like say IPR data, some patented technology data, etc., etc. So those data can again be taken out. The third is the phishing attacks. So I think we spoke about it. So we'll quickly run through this. Fraudsters set up fake websites resembling legitimate banks or online platforms to deceive customers. Through phishing emails, users are dedicated or are directed to these forced websites where they are prompted to enter the personal information, the user ID, password, and the stolen data is then used for fraudulent activities. Some of the other challenges. So let's, if we keep, say, security aside and the security challenges aside, some of the other challenges when it comes to IT are the software licensing challenges. So the management of the software licenses and the maintenance cost is one of the important challenges. So what happens is, say, certain companies have a lot of reliance on software vendors. Say if there is a big implementation of ERP system, enterprise resource planning system, and there is a vendor who is very popular in the market who have given this particular software. After, say, the initial sale of the software, they will keep on asking recurring fees, right? So that's a significant cost to the company. What happens is companies keep on increasing the prices. Now, from the organization perspective, they've already bought the software, they've made significant changes, and the entire system run on that. So then they are holding, the software vendors are holding the company by the neck and demanding more money, right? And that's where they have to pay the money for the software licenses, irrespective of what they think, correct? Advancements in technology such as virtualization, cloud computing have added complexity to the software licenses. Companies say that if you are hosting it on the virtualized platform, then the software rates are different as compared to hosting it on-premise, etc. So these are certain complexities that come along with the software licenses. Licenses rules also vary basis the customer requirements and the delivery models, right? So as I said, say if you want a database license where the database is hosted on a physical machine, the license cost may be different as compared to the license cost for hosting the same database on a virtualized platform, on say a cloud computing on a virtualized data center. The cost may be different, and hence it adds more complexity to the calculation of these licenses. Proper IT asset management programs with robust controls are essential to mitigate the risks involved with the software licenses. Now, this goes without saying. Some of the challenges when it comes to cloud computing is lack of knowledge about where the physical data center is located, right? Now, we've said that it's located on the internet, but we really don't know where it is located. So that is a significant risk by itself. And hence you see the Reserve Bank of India has mandated the banks that the data of the customer and the transaction data should be located only in India. It shouldn't go outside the geographical boundaries of the country. So, which leads to the data governance issues. So banks, if they have to deploy the banking servers on the internet, on the cloud computing platform, then the cloud vendors ensure that the data is located only in India. So they would select data centers which are located in India to govern the data privacy laws of India. Security and privacy concerns arise when applications are shared. So because it is cloud, companies don't know, because they cannot look and feel, cannot change how data is stored, etc. So hence, security remains a top challenge when it comes to multi-tenancy or basically when application is shared between different customers. Hence, things like logical partitioning, data segregation, these are important topics when it comes to cloud computing. Enterprises face challenges regards to data residency, as we spoke. As valuable data may reside outside the company's network, outside the firewalls, raising security concerns. So companies or organizations would want to do a thorough audit of the cloud providers, what are the different security controls that they deploy in place. Because at the end of the day, the customer is responsible for their data. Although they've opted for cloud and cloud providers have a good layer of security, etc., but the data ownership still lies with the organization. And hence, challenges like data residency, where exactly is the data located, what are the different security controls, things like encryption, etc., gets evaluated thoroughly. Hacking and attacks on cloud infrastructure can impact multiple clients because it's a common shared data centers among organizations, highlighting the importance of security measures. Detailed understanding of service levels and transparent policies are essential while finalizing contracts with the cloud providers to mitigate risk. So as I said, cloud providers, they provide certain level of service level guarantees, SLA uptime. Along with that, they would see what are the roles and responsibilities between the cloud vendor and the end organization. So these have to be thoroughly evaluated. We can also talk about some of the gaps when it comes to the IT skill. Organizations might not have the right skills that are required for accessing, say, cloud computing systems. So that happens to be one of the top areas when it comes to adoption of the newest technologies. Organizations and professionals struggle to keep pace with the technology advancement. So if there is a traditional way in which they were operating and things change, it becomes difficult for them to adopt to these new changes. Factors like the fear of the unknown and the resistance to change the hinder technology adoption and skill development. So as I said, so people don't really want to change the way things work, right? And that could be, that could lead to low adoption rate when it comes to new age technologies. Ignorance and underutilization of technologies limit organization for maximizing the potential of the available resources. And bridging the IT skill gap is crucial for leveraging the technology effectiveness and driving business innovation. So just to summarize, we said that how the IT and the technology landscape changed right from the 1960s, revolutionizing computing, and from the development of mini computers, mainframe, supercomputers, and the now age of cloud computing. The microchip brought a shift, and it pivoted the way personal computers were made more affordable and more accessible to the market. Having the internet connectivity in the early 90s and the rapid spread of internet ensured that the technology growth has happened. And so the different enhancements like the ERP systems, the centralized management systems came into place. Mobile technologies, GPS, 5G, wireless communication have enabled countless applications. We spoke about use cases of IoT, internet banking, mobile banking, etc. SMAC, or social mobile analytics and cloud, is driving and reshaping business in the new age. We spoke about analytics, how analytics could help, things like weather forecasting, demand forecasting, inventory management, and deploying these on the cloud, how it is changing the game in today's environment when it comes to cost effectiveness, driving more adoption, etc., etc. And whenever there are advantages, as we discussed, we also bring in the challenges. So challenges in terms of high security threats, fraud opportunities, and financial scams. So while we are making advancements in technology, eye has to be kept on the security and the data privacy as well. So with this, I thank you for viewing. I hope this has been informative to you, and I'll see you in the next class. Thank you.